Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Excuse me. I'm a little congested. Today we have back with us for the third time special guest Darlene Lancer, and she is here to answer the questions that you might have about narcissism and talk about her book, Dealing with a Narcissist, 8 Steps to Improve Self-Esteem and Self-Boundaries and Set Boundaries in Difficult Relationships. Darlene is also the author of several other books, including Codependency for Dummies and her other new book, Freedom from Guilt and Blame, which she was here last Friday to discuss, so you definitely want to listen to that show. Darlene Lancer is a licensed marriage and family therapist and relationship and codependency expert. And over the course of 30 years, she has helped men and women recover from trauma, achieve greater self-esteem and autonomy, and find their paths personally and professionally. And like I said, today she's going to talk about narcissism and how it relates to boundary issues, self-esteem issues, and how to deal with them, the difficult relationships that they cause for us. So let me welcome Darlene. Good morning, Darlene.
Oh, hi, Randy. It's a real pleasure to be back talking to you and your audience.
It is. Yes, thank you. It's so good to have you back. This topic is very different because you are a codependency expert. So, thank you for coming back. I wanted to say that, too. So why, as a codependency expert, did you write a book about dealing with a narcissist?
Well, it's interesting. It kind of took me by surprise, too, because after writing Codependency for Dummies, and I started getting people calling me and wanting to consult with me, I guess I thought that most people would be in a relationship with an addict, although I know that that's not necessary. People are codependent and they're not. But I got a surprising number of calls from people that were involved with narcissists, both female and male narcissists. And that became a really core part of my practice. And also I post every day on Facebook, and my followers seem to be very interested in the subject. I get a lot of comments and everything whenever I post anything on narcissism. So it really made me realize how much that's a problem for codependents, getting involved with narcissists.
Yes, it really is. And this is such a widespread problem. I don't know if you know that, this is one of my expertises, and I'm actually in the process of writing a book, too. And I counsel people from all over the world with this issue. And I had somebody call me from Iceland the other day, and she says, you know, there's just nobody here who knows how to deal with this. This problem is worldwide. It is epidemic. I just don't even know. I'm trying to figure out why so many people are dealing with this issue, but it is so, so widespread. Why don't you explain to us, for those who don't understand what narcissism is, exactly what it is then?
Well, people are very loose with the term. They call someone a narcissist if they're selfish or like a lot of attention or brag a lot. But to have this personality disorder, which is a serious mental illness, really, it requires 5 out of 9 traits, symptoms. The 3 core ones are lacking empathy, needing admiration from others to an extreme extent, and grandiose ideas. But sometimes this grandiosity could be just in their fantasies. So it doesn't mean that they're always bragging about it. They may, you know, keep it more to themselves. And then after those 3, they need 5 other symptoms, which can be selected all, they need 2 more symptoms, and all 5 can be chosen from a list of 9 that the diagnostic code describes. And some of the others would be believing that they're special and unique, and that they only want to associate with high status people. Something that really irks others is an extreme sense of entitlement, that they deserve special treatment. They expect to be treated a certain way and don't have to wait in lines, etc. And then what's the most painful is that when they take advantage of others to their own ends, and they'll do anything to get their way, get their needs met. And then often narcissists are envious of others, or they think other people are envying them. Another trait that is really irritating to other people is having an attitude of arrogance and superiority, or they may even act that way. So, but people display these traits on a continuum. So that's why someone might be what's called a subclinical narcissist. So they don't have all 5. Maybe they have 4 of the 5. And then there's people that have the 5, but it's very mild. And you might not even know for sure that they're a narcissist. All the way to an extreme case, which they have maybe more than 5, and very extreme in the manifestation of the symptom, and they're malignant narcissists. And they're more hostile. They have more antisocial behavior. They'll go to greater lengths, break the law, be unethical in order to seek revenge and get their way, or to make their way to the top. There was a movie out last year called The Gift, about someone who would do anything to get ahead professionally. And I won't give away the plot, but he broke the law doing it. So.
Okay. Right. And we see a lot of these people in government, and we see them in psychiatric fields. We see them, we really see these people everywhere. Don't we?
Well, yes, and where I live.
And they're so destructive. They're so destructive to other people.
Yeah. Where I live, near Hollywood, they say that there's more narcissists in the entertainment field, but it's understandable because of the nature of the profession, and they're all concentrated in one place. I guess I should point out there is such a thing as healthy narcissism. So the word in itself, from a clinical standpoint, isn't necessarily bad. It's NPD, the disorder that, even though it seems so widespread, actually it only exists in 1 to 6% of the population. But even that percentage is challenged because some of the tests were done with students in college, and they tend to be more self-centered than someone more mature. But narcissism is something that children display. It's a developmental stage when they can't distinguish themselves from their parent. That comes later in the Oedipal phase, around 5 or 6 years old, when they can't really have a mutually reciprocal relationship. But some individuals then don't progress in their ability to love, and they remain very sensitive to wounding. They have unstable relationships. They have very destructive defenses. And they're not really grounded in reality. And this is your typical person with NPD, narcissistic personality disorder.
Right. And I think that it helps to understand the difference between being a narcissist and having narcissistic personality disorder. When with somebody that's a narcissist, they are willing, they may be self-centered, but if you confront them, they're willing to hear you about, you know, who they are and the things that they're doing to offend you. When you're dealing with somebody with narcissistic personality disorder, they will rage at any insinuation that they're less than perfect, and sort of that helps to draw the line between the two. There's many other distinguishing factors, but that does help to draw the line. So what are the underlying beliefs of a narcissist?
Well, I encourage people, if they wanted to get along with a narcissist, is to really understand them. That's really the beginning of, I list 8 steps in my book, Dealing with a Narcissist. And you have to understand that they didn't choose to be this way. And they are behaving the way they are because of wounds and scars from their childhood. They didn't get sufficient nurturing. One theorist, Otto Kernberg, thinks the core is parental aggression. It could be veiled hostility, but a parent that treats them with indifference. Often they grow up in an emotional vacuum. And there's new research indicating there may be a genetic component or predisposition to it in families with a narcissistic parent. And by the way, that often is a prescription for codependency. But you might have, out of several children, just one that's a narcissist. So their attitude is one of a defensive posture towards the world, an aggressive frame of, they want to push people away in a sense, even though they need them and want to be admired. But that's how they protect themselves, because actually they're very fragile. They will seek power, whereas their partner usually will want to accommodate, and that's what can make them a perfect fit. In fact, you can think of Narcissus, who in the myths was like absorbed in looking at his own reflection. He's overly self-absorbed, and his partner in the myth is Echo, and she's overly absorbed in him. She pines away just waiting for attention, and that's kind of a paradigm of how in a nutshell, what the relationship is like. So the narcissist will do anything to preserve their illusion of perfection, grandiosity, because they're so fragile. They need to have power over others, so they don't feel vulnerable. They don't want to feel any vulnerability. They don't want to show emotions. So when their partner asks them, you know, to say what they're feeling. That's the last thing they want to do, because they don't want to get too close. They don't want to need anyone. They can't tolerate criticism. Often they're perfectionistic. The thing is that there's a lot of shame underneath, and this is what makes them similar to their partner. And they have this idea, I have to be self-sufficient. No one will meet my needs, and I never want to need anyone, because when you think about it, if you need people, then you're vulnerable. They could say no to you. They could leave you. They could criticize you. They could reject you. So they never want to need anyone. And at the same time, they feel like they always have to perform. Otherwise, they feel worthless. If they're not perfect, to be normal is a crime. So they have to excel in everything and perform, produce. Otherwise, they feel inferior. This is from their shame base. At the core, they feel unlovable. No one will love me for who I really am. So they always have to put on this performance. And I'll entertain. They're very charming. And some are very successful or have a lot of talents. And they have this idea of it's a dog-eat-dog world. So people are out for themselves. They want to exploit me, so I'm going to exploit them. Or they're just nice to me because they want to use me. So everything is built on power, as you can see, and control. I'll control you. Otherwise, you might control me. And many think that they're above the rules. They're better than others. As I mentioned, entitled to special treatment. I think this, if you, all of these traits are kind of interrelated. If you look at the core, is one is self-protection. It's me against the world, and I have to be in control and have power, because I'm really too vulnerable and fragile, but I don't want to know that about myself. So they hide that even from themselves. They don't feel good enough. They need constant validation from others. That's kind of the basic core beliefs.
Right. They hide behind a false self. It's called a false self. It's a kind of a mask, a suit of armor that they wear against the world. And it's impenetrable. No one can get through that. And that's what's so frustrating, to be in a relationship with someone or to be the child of someone. I'm the child of a narcissistic mother. I grew up codependent.
Mm-hmm.
Get it.
I will say that... Not all narcissists are that extreme. Some can be at least appear to be loving, and they can have insight. So I think that there's hope. And a lot of times people read about the worst cases on the internet, but that doesn't describe all narcissists. And most people don't really have a full-fledged malignant type that you read about and hear about. Sometimes you can work with them, and sometimes they can get in touch with their vulnerability, but it's usually fleeting, because they will fall back to their defenses. But some have more insight and are able to look at themselves and have guilt. So it doesn't necessarily, if they're sociopathic, they don't feel guilty. So, again, it's on a continuum.
Right, right. And really, every, this is a mental illness. Every mental illness has a continuum. There's always from mild to severe. So,
absolutely.
So we can't put everybody in the same category. Now, one of the things that's really, really common in relationships with narcissists is this lack of boundaries. Can you explain that, Darlene?
Oh, yes. That explains a lot of the traits, too, because, as I said, it's called primary or archaic narcissism. When a child is going through that stage, their mother or their parents are extensions of themselves. As I said, they can have a mutually reciprocal relationship. So, and just like Narcissus in the myth is looking in the water, he's just seeing himself. So it can be very frustrating because you feel like you can't penetrate. Like I think the example you were saying, you can't get them. They see the world as a projection of themselves, so they can't really have a mutually reciprocal relationship. And this accounts for the lack of empathy, because they can't. Now, some studies have shown that people with subclinical narcissism, they can learn empathy if you, through their imagination, if you say, well, can you imagine if you were going through that, if that was happening to you, how would you feel? And they can kind of think it through, but it doesn't come naturally. And sometimes it's hard to tell because narcissists, many have learned how to be socially appropriate. So sometimes they can say the right things, but you get a feeling like it's not genuine and you're just not sure. In your gut, you don't know if you can really believe them or not, and you're always kind of questioning. So sometimes you can have that experience. But because of the lack of boundaries, there's no separation. What that also means is that if you criticize them, there's no shield. Anything you say, they absorb. Now, a lot of things I'm describing here is typical of codependence. You might notice there's an overlap, sensitivity to criticism, feeling unlovable and shame, lack of boundaries, and excuse me, need some water. I think, in my opinion, that narcissists are codependent. They share the same basic traits of shame, dysfunctional boundaries, dysfunctional communication, control, needing validation from others, intimacy problems. So there's a lot of overlapping symptoms. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It does. And if you, and as the child of a narcissist, when you grow up with no boundaries, because they don't want boundaries between you and them, they want full access to their victims or their targets. They want full access. So as a child, it's really, really dangerous because it creates, eventually creates an adult who has no boundaries, who goes into relationships and goes into life as a doormat. They don't know where they let off and other people begin. And I know that was my case. It took me years to recognize that in myself. But it all stems from the childhood of not being shown boundaries, not having learned them. What is the role of defenses?
Well, there are several defenses to shame, and that's for self-preservation, is for self-protection. And usually they come from wanting to protect oneself from shame. And the thing is with narcissists, I go into a lot of detail about this in my book, Conquering Shame and Codependency. The thing is with narcissists, a lot of their defenses make relationships really difficult. So there's three basic reactions to shame, and one is withdrawal, aggression, and that could be aggression towards oneself or towards someone else, and denial, okay? And usually a narcissist will react with aggression and even rage. Now, it's interesting, a lot of people might get angry if they're shamed, but rage is something different. It's the difference between anger and rage is you get angry when your needs aren't met, when you get frustrated, you know, you're on hold forever, lost in voicemail, trying to get tech support. That happens to
right.
me. I get angry a lot.
Right.
Or, but rage is when is actually different because it's a wound to themselves, to yourself. Something about that is said or done to you triggers a deep wound from your past, usually. So often you're not even in present time. You just react with this volatile rage. You can be livid, go from 0 to 10, you know, in a second. And that signifies that something fragile, something wounded in yourself has been opened up. Another way to deal with shame is perfectionism. So if I'm perfect, then I don't have to look at my flaws. Another way to deal with it is arrogance. It's a similar thing. And contempt for others. I describe in my book on shame the paradox of shame. So we all have this internal critic that will judge us and judge others. And it usually is coming from a place of superiority. And then there's a part of us that feels devalued, that really feels less than. And both stem from shame, either feeling better than or feeling too low. And the one way to that shame manifests is devaluing others. So you see, the narcissist will put down other people, and it's a defense to feeling devalued inside. And then, you know, codependent will either judge others, often they do that, or they will judge themselves. And they'll also idealize others. So they, and this is one of the ways which they get attracted to narcissists, they idealize other people, and to be close to somebody famous, somebody powerful, somebody so charming or beautiful or talented, and then that lifts them up. They don't have to feel so low or inferior because I have a trophy wife or I have a very powerful, successful husband, for example. So those are other ways of dealing with shame. Envy is a way of dealing with shame. So I think that people are envying me. It's because I'm so great. Or I'm envying. I don't really have to feel that I'm inferior. I'm just angry and envious of other people that have more than I. But I'm not really too aware that it's because I feel that I'm lacking. All I'm feeling is my envy. Avoidance through addiction is a way. A lot of people say that addicts are narcissists. I don't think that's necessarily true. They might have NPD. But when you're in the throes of an addiction, all that matters to you is, you know, getting your drug or gambling or sex or whatever you're addicted to. And humor is a way of dealing with it. It can be sometimes considered a more mature defense because it's socially acceptable. It doesn't push people away. Aside from rage and contempt, this arrogance, one of the defenses that is so difficult in relationships with narcissists is projection. So I mentioned the devaluing of others. That's a projection of how they feel inside. And they don't even see you as separate. So they, instead of blaming themselves, they'll blame you. If they're criticizing and devaluing you, you can think to yourself when you get some objectivity, this is how they feel about themselves. They're really projecting. They're showing me how they were treated. Maybe they were put down the way they're putting down me. If it's like being with a bully. If a bully says, you know, you're nothing, you're worthless, that's how they really feel inside. whether conscious or unconsciously.
Right. You know, I find that the hardest thing for people involved with narcissists is the acceptance of what they're dealing with, because a mind that is not pathological, which, you know, the narcissistic mind, the person with narcissistic personality disorder does have a pathological mind, they think differently than we do. And so when we apply our logic to their behavior, we get very, very confused. And so it's just really about a blanket acceptance of who we're dealing with rather than an analysis. Right, Darlene? Wouldn't you say so?
Oh, yeah. People get caught up in why is this person acting this way and what are they thinking? This is very codependent. What are they thinking? They get very hypervigilant, walk on eggshells. If you've had an abusive parent or an addicted parent, you know, that's going to be the way that you survive, is like, when is this person going to blow up? When am I going to be in trouble? Are they going to be nice or are they going to be mean? So you have to always be on the lookout for, is it safe? Is it not safe? You know, it's like growing up in a war zone. So that would be typical behavior in a living with trauma, and that can be what it's like. But I encourage people, as one of my steps, is to step back, realize that you're dealing with someone who is mentally handicapped, and try to look at the behavior objectively, not taking it personally, and just try to think, watch how the person reacts, what are their triggers, what are your triggers, and try to understand who you're dealing with. So when I say accept the truth about it, that doesn't mean that it's acceptable, but that's the first step in taking action that's going to be effective. In in AA they talk about the three A's. It's not the AAA. it's awareness that's coming out of denial, acceptance. That means you may not like the truth, but you have to accept it. You may not like that you're a codependent or married to a narcissist, or like that you're being abused. It may not be okay with you, but this is a fact. I mean, a lot of people, I wrote a blog, Emotional Abuse Beneath Your Radar. Most people don't realize they're being emotionally abused. I was in a relationship where I was abused and I didn't know it. You know, it took a while for me to actually have the terminology and to know that. But that was the beginning of, then I could set some boundaries when I realized that. It also lowers your expectation, because partners often are like Echo in the myth, are pine away and just, you know, lose themselves waiting for some attention, hoping for a kind word of love, hoping that their feelings will matter, that they'll be empathized with, that they will ever get the closeness they want, and not realizing who they're dealing with. There's somebody who's not capable of that. So that's the beginning. Did I say the third A was action?
Action,
so
okay.
Awareness, acceptance, and then you can take action, and it's not the action of pleading, begging, placating, attacking, none of those things. The worst thing you can do is confront a narcissist with criticism. You'll just get rage back. It's not going to, because they're so sensitive to wounding. So you have to treat them with a scalpel, and there's very specific ways that you can deal with them.
Right, and this is why it's so important to do these kind of shows, because, you know, you mentioned the fact that emotional abuse is not something that people are necessarily aware of, and with narcissism, it can be very covert. Their tactics are very covert, and they do things that we're not even aware of that change the nature of how we think. So, I find that people do not always know that they've been emotionally abused. I've asked people, so were you emotionally abused? And they'll say no, and I'll say, all right, tell me your story. And they were so emotionally abused, but we just don't, many of us don't recognize it. Well, we're at that point in the show where I'm going to give you the floor, Darlene, and let you share what you might want to share that maybe we haven't covered.
Well, for one thing, I want people to know that they can email me at info@darlenelancer.com. That's DarLenecer. And I'm happy to send you a checklist of at least 48 traits to look for in recognizing narcissistic behaviors. I also have on my website, you can access 14 tips for letting go. My website,
and your website
is? Yeah, whatiscodependency.com, all one word. And on my website are links to YouTube. I have a YouTube channel where there's a little video on recovery from codependency, which describes the three A's. There's a talk there on narcissism, and there's a lot of videos and audios on conflict and codependent relationships and shame, etc. And the link to my Facebook page, Codependency Recovery, or my timeline is just my name, and I post every day both my articles and other people's and tips and a lot of informative information. Also, when I give talks, I post it there. And links to Twitter, I'm also on LinkedIn. So, but my website is a hub for all of this. And on my seminars page, there's also some links to other talks or seminars, things like that. Oh, for people that are professionals, or if you're just interested, I have a tab at the top called Articles, and under that is a peer-reviewed article on treating narcissism, so how you would do therapy with them. So,
okay.
Yes, that covers in this book.
Yeah.
It's an e-book. Yeah. It's,
okay. I was going to ask
dealing,
you.
Yeah, it's just... I should point out, it's not just for narcissists, but these steps that I describe are effective with anyone who is very difficult, high conflict relationships. Often codependents just get into high conflict or someone that's abusive. So it's dealing with a narcissist, 8 steps to raise self-esteem and set boundaries with difficult people.
Great. So that, right, that does apply. That does broaden that scope.
The same steps would apply, yes, if you're dealing with a borderline or an addict or just an abuser.
Right, right, exactly, right. And that's what narcissists are. They are abusers. And it's very important that we know what we're dealing with. So we just have about a minute or two, but... You write in your book in Chapter 8, and this is Step 3, detach with love. Can you just briefly, take a minute or two and just speak about detaching with love?
Yes, and actually I have a whole chapter on it in Codependency for Dummies. A lot of people think, well, detaching means I have to leave or I'm just cold to the person. That's not what it means. It means that you separate the behavior from the person. So you could still love the person, but just like a child, because in a way, a narcissist has arrested development. They're stuck in their emotional development somewhere under 6 years old. So when a toddler has a tantrum, you don't hate your child. You're understanding. You might not like the behavior in the moment, but it doesn't stop you from loving them. You know, you learn how to deal with it. You might actually even give them a hug to calm them down. So it means there's a saying in Al-Anon called Q-tip, short for quit taking it personally. So when you stop taking things personally, you understand with empathy who you're dealing with. It has a tendency to de-escalate conflict. It lowers your expectation. You can then not react to everything, because when you react, you're not in control. You hand over your self-esteem to the narcissist every time you react. And keep in mind, whether it's a narcissist or anyone else, that when somebody is abusing you, it's about power over you. So their partners get caught up in our defending themselves, explaining themselves, arguing about the content. You need to be addressing the meta communication. You need to be addressing how they're speaking to you, not the content. Because as soon as you start defending and explaining, you've at that moment told the other person, you have the power to yell at me, you have the power to criticize me and put me down. You have the power to judge me, and now I'm defending myself. So you want to be able to confront a narcissist, but that doesn't mean criticize or attack. You
okay.
confront in specific ways.
Okay, great. We are out of time, Darlene. It's been wonderful having you here again. And the next time you write another book, because I know you're pretty prolific with this, next time you write a book, you'll contact me and we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it again on air.
I would love
to. So thank you for sharing this expertise with us. I know that a lot of people need to hear this. Thank you for writing the book, and it's been great talking to you today.
Thank you so much, Randy. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, it's been a pleasure for me too. Thanks. Bye-bye. Have a good day. Now, for my listeners, this on the second Friday of every month, so in this case it's going to be on the 12th, which is this Friday, I will be taking your calls about narcissistic personality disorder abuse, your issues about how you are being abused, and give you free advice on air. I am a life issues counselor. This is my specialty. I counsel people all over the world. But if you'd like to talk to me for free, you can call in at 424-220-1801, 424-220-1801. Call into the show, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and you can ask me your questions. If you cannot call in live, you can email me ahead of time at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. R-A-N-D-I-G-F-I-N-E, randygfine.com. Send me your letter with your questions. I will read it on air and send you a link so that you will be able to listen to that show. So that is this Friday, the 12th, and every second Friday of the month, I will be doing this. So take advantage of the free advice. I do want to help you, so feel free to call in. Also, stop by my website, which is also randygfine.com, and it is also my hub of everything that I do, and there's links to everything. There's links to my counseling service. There's links to every show, so check that out. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is talk radio show host, author, and life issues counselor, Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RandyGFine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate. We can't wait to be the change. Be the change. strength.